Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing A League of Their Own Season 1. Damask Leary, What's the happy haps?
Well, we were just chatting about it just then. So I really enjoyed watching Paper Girls and now it's been cancelled, so that's that.
Yeah, this is an interesting one to bring up actually because it's sort of, it's like on the sub-list of the shows we might review. We've had actually a reviewer request to check it out. And I didn't know until I saw your tweet the other day that you enjoyed it, that you'd watched it. In case we do a full review, don't go too in-depth, but what did you think of season one?
Yeah, I really liked it. It was really fun. I think there are a couple of issues here and there, but the majority of it was a really enjoyable show. I think young kids into young teens, I should say, so kids and young teens will really like it. I mean, it's a fantastic adventure. It was a cool ride and it was really interesting and unlike a lot of the other stuff on TV at the moment. So, yeah, really disappointing. And obviously it's got one of my favorites, Jason Mantzoukas, in it.
Sure. Actually, one thing we didn't talk about is what exactly Paper Girl is. I knew it was based on a comic book series that was created by Brian K. Vaughan, who created Why the Last Man, which was a series we reviewed at the end of last year, was it? Earlier this year, whenever it was. And Cliff Chang, I believe, or Chung. And it'd been a popular series. I think people were excited about this. Was this on Amazon as well?
Yeah, it was on Amazon. So I didn't know anything about it either. I just know Jason Mantzoukas was speaking about it very briefly on how did this get made. And he didn't really talk much about it. He's just like, go watch it. So I did. So yeah, it's just about a group of girls who are paper girls in the 80s. Some weird stuff happens and they get sent into the future where they are trying to figure out all this time travel stuff and meeting their older selves and all that stuff, and it's really fun.
No, that was really spoiled because all of that was in the trailer that I watched as well. But
it's in like the first 10 minutes of the show.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah, it all happens pretty quickly. So that's sad news to hear that's been and gone, basically. And the problem is these things is when they've been and gone like this, sort of flown under the radar and only really knew. I knew about it, but hadn't really known it arrived, wasn't hearing a lot of buzz about it, and now it's gone and it'll probably never be spoken about again, which is always a sad thing.
It is really sad. Like, some really great young actors in it. Like, all the girls did a fantastic job, so very disappointed for them.
Before we move into our review for this episode, I did want to also bring up something, a correction that I made over and over, a mistake I made over and over again on our Ms. Marvel review.
Oh, no, we're done.
I wanted to thank Steve, a very devoted listener of the podcast, for bringing this up. We were talking, and I was the chief person who stuffed this up, but we were talking about Ms. Marvel, and in episodes 4 and 5, it takes place overseas in Pakistan in a city called Karachi, not Mumbai, which I said a million times over. So I'm going to blame... it wasn't pulled up by my co-host, I might add, so...
no, not at all. I didn't even notice. That's bad.
Either that's just me being shit geography or me being closet racist. I'm not really sure which one it is. But
I think the listeners would like to know which one it is.
It's the first one. I don't believe it's the first one. Yeah, so apologies for getting that one really wrong.
Yeah, super sorry. Whoopsie.
Really wrong.
That's shit.
Anyway, with all that out of the way now, let's get to our spoiler-free review of A League of Their Own Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
A League of Their Own is an American period sports comedy drama series co-created by Will Graham and Abby Jacobson as an adaptation of the Gina Davis and Tom Hanks classic 1992 film of the same name. Diverging greatly from its source material with new characters and storylines, the focus on World War II-era women's professional baseball team, the Rockford Peaches, remains. Co-creator Abby Jacobson stars alongside Shantae Adams, Darcy Carden, Roberto Colendrez, Gemazola Icamello, Kelly McCormack, Molly Ephraim, Melanie Field, Priscilla Delgado, and Ron Swanson himself, Nick Offerman. Season 1 of A League of Their Own arrived in full on Amazon Prime Video on August 12th, 2022, containing 8 episodes, each coming in at around 54 minutes, and took us approximately 7 hours and 10 minutes to watch. At the time of this recording, it has not been officially announced if A League of Their Own will return for a second season. The creators have confirmed that they are working on scripts. So before we get to our spoiler-free review, Damask, I did want to ask you, how familiar are you with A League of Their Own, the original 1992 film, and are you a fan of this film? How do you feel coming into this TV reboot, we'll say, or reimagining?
Look, you know what? I'm not going to go too much into it because a lot of that is in my spoiler-free review. Let's just say I have watched the film. And I was very excited, but also there's quite a bit of trepidation around a reboot being made.
Sure. Yeah, I'm familiar with the movie. I feel like it was one of those movies that was on pretty regularly on TV. Mm-hmm. And I did go out of my way to re-watch the film before watching the series. Because I knew I enjoyed the film. I always had enjoyed the film. Wasn't necessarily one I owned. It wasn't like in my Blu-ray collection or anything like that, but had a good time with it. Maybe. And I mean, Gina Davis at like at the height of her powers as well.
Oh,
so
my
it was a good
gosh.
Time watching.
Just, yeah, really defining, you know?
Really?
You know? Yeah.
yeah, for both of us by the sounds of it. Mm. And, but yeah, going back to watch it, I realized I'd seen the movie a lot. I'd probably missed the first half hour a lot though too. Does that make sense?
That's got like one of my favorite lines in it in the entire film.
I
when John Lovitz turns to a cow and says, "Will you shut up?"
That was
always
improv, right?
Yeah.
I realized I'd forgotten that Judd Lovitz was in it. I realized that I'm trying to think whereabouts I came into the movie most of the time. Mm. And it was about the time that Tom Hanks walks into the film. Do you know what I mean? Where he literally walks into the locker room and takes a giant piss. I think from there on, I sort of like knew the movie beat for beat just about. Mm. But the bit before it where they're getting they're getting sort of recruited.
Mm.
I didn't remember it all. And it's pretty important too, because it really defines the character, the dynamics between the two main characters.
Yeah.
So that was nice to see that finally. But yeah, no, I was a fan of the show and hearing about this becoming a fan of the movie and hearing about it becoming a TV show. Equally, like there's that moment, that idea of trepidation, like that, can they do justice to the original? But also thought it sort of like made a lot of sense. Like something that's based around so many different characters, that's female-centric, that's obviously very political for the time, that is also can be played over multiple seasons, unlike the original movie, which is just over one season. It's sort of, you could see how you could expand upon that original idea in a really enjoyable and gratifying way. So went in enthusiastic. And when Abby Jacobson was attached to it so early on, Darcy Carden and these sorts of people, it was like there was reasons to be enthusiastic or optimistic.
Well, that's the thing is that it was clearly going to be made by people who grew up with the film and obviously loved it, one would think, as much as I did. So that was encouraging.
Yeah. With all that in mind then, Damask, could you please give us your spoiler-free review on A League of Their Own Season 1?
I can indeed. I can. All right, so about a month ago, I was sitting in my classroom and one of my students asked what my favorite films were. And I hate that question, not because I don't have any, but because I have a terrible memory, as all you listeners would know. And I just can't remember any films. But I will say that no matter what, I can't list them all, but I can always remember two. One being The First Wives Club, you know, it's a timeless comedy classic starring three women at the height of their comedic genius. Almost perfect film. The other is, unsurprisingly, A League of Their Own. I had a copy on VHS that I'd recorded off of the TV. As you were saying, that movie was on Australian TV, I don't know, like every 3 months. It was always on TV.
Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
What's the other one? Billy Madison, Groundhog Day, and Terminator 2, I'm pretty sure.
Always. Just on rotation.
Just those.
That's it. It seemed to constantly be on the TV, but that wasn't enough. I had to tape it one day when it was on TV. I need my own copy. I need to watch it all the time. Even now as an adult, I watch it probably a few times a year. To re-watch the film brings me back to, you know, being a teeny tiny girl playing in the backyard with a mitt in hand of a sport I had never seen a game of.
Have a baseball mitt?
I had a baseball mitt and a baseball bat.
It's not that baseball isn't played in Australia, but it's not a popular sport by real standards.
It was my brother's. I don't know why he had it, or maybe someone went to America and brought it back for him. I don't know why we had a baseball mitt, but we did.
Interesting.
So I was constantly in the backyard, squaring up to the backside of my cubby house, throwing the baseball into my mitt, looking over to an imaginary Gina Davis. You know, I'd be seriously considering what kind of pitch I would throw. She'd offer up one suggestion with a hand signal. I'd shake my head. It wasn't the time for a curveball. It was the championship game. The bases were loaded. I couldn't risk it. Then finally, Gina and I would agree, straight down the middle with lightning speed. Bam! The ball would smash up against the cubby house. Imaginary Gina had caught it. I'd toss my hands in the air and celebrate my victory. I'd brought it home for the Rockford Peaches. Now, it sounds very braggy to say, but I won every championship I ever played in that backyard.
Wow.
I am, to this day, undefeated. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't believe you don't lead with this. This is incredible.
Every time those imaginary bases were loaded, three strikes, they're out, you know. And the crowd cheered. Look, I was a little girl who had scraped knees, wore baggy shorts and basketball jerseys. I spent my days climbing trees, sword fighting, and imagining a great big life full of boundless adventures. Having a film that depicted women having their own adventures, surrounded by possibilities and a fiery desire to be somebody, that meant a lot. I didn't fully understand why I was so in love with that film. I now do. So, and it's many reasons, not just the obvious.
There's a few.
Thank you. So when I say that this film, or that film, I should say, is ingrained in my soul, I mean it. I have a Rockford Peach patch, not on a uniform, but on my heart. So, to come back 25 years later from when I'd first seen the film to a recreation of something so precious and to find that it reflects me in a way that I couldn't have even imagined as a child is joyful in a way that is difficult to describe. The original film showed me various manifestations of womanhood. These depictions were limited by the time. It was the 90s after all. However, it still made space for me as a little girl to see myself. But now in 2022, so much more space has been made. In the new version of this story, we're able to paint the picture with a few more colours. I can only imagine what else will be seen and acknowledged in another 20, 25 years and the stories that will be created. Maybe our kids will have their very own A League of Their Own reboot, filled with secret lives we didn't know about, but were hidden inside them. They'll play in the backyard, imagining a world that is so much bigger than it seems now. So, let's focus a little bit more on this show. This show has moments that echo the original. However, it's given the space to explore new avenues and perspectives. We have the addition of Max. In the original film, the only acknowledgement of segregation in sport is brief and insufficient. I can't speak to how effective or affecting this representation is to people of colour, but the story itself worked for me. It can be dangerous, I think, in a show to tell two stories at the same time when they are seemingly disconnected. Thankfully, the world that Max lives in is compelling and full of characters that I have great affection for. So I never felt like I was being pulled away from the story I wanted to watch. It was I think those two things side by side worked really well together and stood in their own right. And we spend most of the show with Carson, Greta, and Lupe. Each of these characters totally worked for me. Carson is a reluctant leader, discovering her own identity. Greta is a seemingly self-assured bombshell and life of the party. And Lupe is a headstrong, focused athlete. They are each given life and allow the viewers an endearing entry point into this moment in history. My only hope for future seasons is that the rest of the Rockford Peaches have an opportunity to shine as bright. I would really like to see more from each of those ladies. I've held such love for Penny Marshall when she made the film back in the day. I have now almost the same amount of love for Abby Jacobson and Will Graham. I really, really enjoyed the show. It added new depths to a property that I consider a religious text. Also, they made it super gay. Like, really gay. You guys, this show is so gay. And for that, I give it 5 out of 5 Rosie O'Donnells.
You told me that before I started watching it. I think you're just like, this, it's really gay. And I was like, oh, okay. And like, I watched the first episode, like, oh yeah, I see. It's pretty gay. Yeah. And the second episode, like, yeah, this is it's pretty gay. And the more I was like, wow, this show is really, really gay. Tabasco's yeah. right.
I told you.
More yeah, even after you told me, it was like, it's more gay than I thought it was gonna be.
It's gay really than gay. The L word. You know what I mean? Like, it's yeah. so gay. But yeah. like, it's also much, much better than the L word.
Totally.
Fucking hell, that's not hard to do.
I mean, I was going to say, I can't comment, but from what I've heard, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. It is always an interesting proposition to remake or revive something so beloved. It is risky to change things, but you also don't want to just be derivative of the thing that came before it. Mm. And there is a decent amount that is similar about A League of Their Own, the TV show, to the movie. It has obviously the same setting, has the same basic setup, has the same baseball team, the Rockford Peaches. Mm-hmm. It has a similar mix of sport, comedy, and the drama genres. And on those fronts, I think it's the TV show is similarly effective. If there's one bit I think is maybe lesser, particularly lesser than the movie, it's the baseball. I think, mm-hmm. which is not necessarily what the show is trying to do, obviously, but we can't deny that baseball and sport is a part of the story. Mm-hmm. I think the baseball is better handled, or the sport side is somewhat better handled in the movie, I think. So if you're coming here because you want sports, capital S, genre, which is a thing, like I talk about how much I love sports movies like Creed and stuff like that, then you'll get it, but you might not get as much as you want. Mm. I think the comedy is there, if not more so, and obviously a bit more modern and sillier, but it charms just as equally as the movie does, I think. While the dramatic thrust, while equally rooted in character and interpersonal dynamics like the movie is thematically the biggest departure from the movie. In many ways, the movie is about two things. Number one, can women's baseball be a genuine popular sport? And then there's the complicated sister relationship between Gina Davis and her, whose name I can't remember all of a sudden, the character's name, and Kit, the sister. The first part is still there, the bit about, like, women's baseball, can it be popular, can it succeed? But the sister thing is gone, mm-hmm. as replaced with other gayer things. And much bigger things, I think, than just, like, yeah. one interpersonal relationship between two sisters. Which is compelling in the movie, don't get me wrong, and great for a two-hour film. But yeah, some of the stuff in here was quite surprising, and maybe best left. We've alluded to it heavily already, but we'll discuss that a lot more when we get to spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Importantly, though, it nails three elements, I think. It is character focused first. Those characters are complex and compelling, and at all times it maintains an energy that sucks you in. In that way, among other obvious similarities, I think, if I'm trying to, like, and comparison is not always a great thing to do when you're trying to review something, but I would favorably compare this to a show that we both loved before it was unceremoniously canceled before season 4. And it reminds me of my feelings on Glow in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
Love that show.
Yeah, right? It may be not as quite as effortlessly slick as Glow's first mm-hmm. season was, at least not to me. And that might also be because this show has a longer runtime with its episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's trying to do more. It's trying to bite off a little bit more. So maybe not quite as slick But it's pretty close. And I really, really, really enjoyed season one of A League of Their Own. I don't think I can surpass what you're saying. I look forward to where this show can grow and how it can build off this super solid foundation. Like you, and like we did with Glow, I hope that it finds room, and I think it will, to flesh out more of the Rockford Peaches, more characters in this world, find stories for them as well, because the glimpses we do get at them are quite interesting. And given enough time and space, I think it could grow into a really, really fantastic show, and already is an excellent show to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So, with that all being said, Damask, you scored this already 5 out of 5 Rosie O'Donnells, is that right?
I gave it 5 out of 5 Rosie O'Donnells, that's true. I think I'll give it a 4.5 though.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to go slightly lower and say it's a 4, but it is a high 4. It is excellent. 5, I've often said, is sort of verging on masterful. I don't know if it's masterful storytelling or masterful TV, if that makes sense. Not like something like Succession or Severance or some of those shows which really are like pushing the genre and the format into places we've never been before. But it is excellent. And I had a fantastic time with it. And I would highly recommend it to anyone.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we slide into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts and or Spotify. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by pitching 5 stars or a glowing review our way.
And to bring the deal home, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
We'd also love you to share Hunting Seasons with anyone in your life that obsessively wants to talk to you about TV. Throw this curveball their way and they'll thank you for it.
Next week, we'll be back with an off-topic, hot-topic bonus episode, followed the week after by our review of Barry Season 3. If you'd like to contribute a question, topic, or story to Off-Topic, Hot Topic, or if you have any thoughts on Barry or A League of Their Own, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for A League of Their Own Season 1.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
Where would you like to start? What would you like to talk about the most?
Look, you've got to be warned. I have no notes. I just watched the show. Most of the time I was red wine drunk and fully invested. So where should we... I think starting with Carson, obviously she's our entry point at the very beginning of the show. I think when you've got a showrunner or a co-creator, I should say, leading something like this, you always wonder if it's going to be good or are they the right person for that role or have they just put them there. I think Abby Jacobson, to me, is endlessly endearing and charming. I personally love her sense of humor, and there are echoes of her character from Broad City. That level of awkwardness that she brings to the character, I think, makes a lot of sense, particularly on the journey that we're going to go on. So at the very beginning, that first scene when we see her running with her bra out and then chatting to that woman about the romance in, I think it's Jane Austen novels, all that stuff, I was like, okay, I feel confident at this level. Who knows, it might be a disaster, but at this stage, I'm feeling good.
I heard some criticisms, or at least some concerns that maybe Abby Jacobson came across as a bit too modern, that not mm-hmm. of the era. Did you feel, you said that you felt some of the similarities to her character in Broad City. Did you get that sense at all? Did that give you, was that a problem for you at all?
I got a sense of that. Mm. Was it a problem? Not really. Yeah, I think she does feel like a modern person.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that matches the majority of what we see in the show. While there's obviously a lot of like social stuff that is of the time that they're touching on, but I think all of the characters feel pretty modern to me.
So there's a few major storylines for her. I mean, just her running away from her husband, Charlie, who is gone to war, as was
a
big part of what had been what happens with our characters in the movie as well, obviously. But then unlike the movie, she forms connection, a romantic connection with particularly, with Greta, basically, with Darcy Carden's character. How did you find that storyline?
Oh boy, Darcy Carden. Look, you know, honestly, I feel flustered. I feel flustered even thinking about it. I thought immediately, I was like, gay. Everything happening between these two people is so gay. Lingering looks abound. So that was exciting. And then the speed with which we are propelled into that relationship is fantastic. I was like, oh, no, it's going to be 7 episodes of pining and that's going to kill me. But I thought it made sense in terms of the character being so enamored by someone like Greta. So that by itself I enjoyed. I was like, well, that makes sense that this kind of smaller town, not a farm girl, small town girl meets this person who seems so free and so confident, all these things that she wants to be but doesn't feel that she is or could be, and is drawn to that. But what I really loved on the flip side of that is the things that we come to know about Greta, and not necessarily, you know, the details of that tragic backstory, but the genuine fear that one would have at the time and all the things that you have to do to protect yourself, that whole dynamic playing out between them while trying to fall in love was really interesting to me.
Greta as a character, played by Darcy Carden, is, I think, a really hard one to get the balance right because at times she can be so frustrating, she could almost be a villain, particularly like you think about how the first episode ends with her like the kissing and then she's going home with a guy and like,
I think I yelled out, "You fucking bitch." Like, I was just
leaving Carson sort of just sort of in the lurch, having taken her on this journey that maybe she didn't know about herself yet or was really figuring
and then,
out.
Like, and sort of, the next day or whatever, pretending like she didn't know what Carson was talking about. I'm like, oh, she's one of those girls. Fuck her. So yeah, they really lent into that at the, first episode and a half, that she could be someone who is so almost careless with what she's doing.
Totally.
When in fact, it's the opposite. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think that plays back and forth throughout the season either. As much as you sort of do believe there is an affection there, there's also there were like, just as things were getting going, Greta would be putting the brakes on things and coming up with excuses for they couldn't do things. And it was just like this back and forth frustration that needed to be there. And as the season goes on, you find out more about Greta and about like why she is the way she is. It becomes crystal clear. But I think I appreciated Darcy Carden's performance because, like I said, it would be easy just to either ignore those elements that are frustrating and try and paper over them with her charisma, or fall too easily into like, I actually really dislike this person because she keeps fucking up over our main character so much.
Yeah, I think if it wasn't played by someone who is so extremely talented as Darcy Carden is, which we knew from, you know, watching
Place,
all those seasons
Barry,
of The Good Place, and Barry, all that stuff.
Yeah.
We knew she was amazing. If you didn't have someone that good, that charismatic, but also with that level of softness and vulnerability, they could really lean into the too cool for school. And I fucking hate those characters.
Yes.
When you're like, I understand that, you know, a character like Carson is meant to think she's super, super cool, but I also need to see a person underneath there. And she plays that really well.
This is like the first gay element, let's say, that the show throws us. We're going to come back to many more. There's lots of it.
It's the cornerstone, but what you come to find out is the whole house is built with gayness.
100%. And it might be easy to come back to this that topic as we go through the other ones. Mm. Before we move on, Carson, though, how did you find her storyline of sort of becoming the begrudging coach of the Rockford Peaches?
Okay, great in theory, and I do like what they're doing. I've got to say this, though. It's probably my only genuine criticism is that I don't think Abby Jacobson is good at giving inspirational speeches.
Sure.
Because, like, there is an air of someone's going to, like, throw a pie in her face or something. You know what I mean? There's, like, an element of there's always going to be this kind of squeamish edge of embarrassment about her and her performance. And so for her then to flip into, I'm going to inspire this group of women to believe in themselves or to like fight it out one more time. There were moments where I didn't quite believe it.
I think I agree with you in a lot of ways. I think whether it's Abby Jacobson or whether it's the character of Carson, but it is hard to believe that she can be a leader of women just because she doesn't have a natural flair for it. And that's obviously the journey. She's meant to be growing into this. But like, how far down that road do we get? And listen, spoilers, we're in spoiler section. They didn't win. So, you know, maybe that's still to come. It's not like she quite got them there yet. So that's a different thing too. But what helped me, I think, to mitigate that problem was that the coaching techniques she was using were actually quite legitimate. Things like getting other people to get involved and to give those rousing speeches, to build connection through vulnerability and all these sorts of things, little things that they've maybe touched on in shows like Ted Lasso and stuff as well. But even like remembering to make sure you're having fun. It's not just about doing the drills a million times and knowing how to do your stealing bases and stuff like that. But like remembering that it's a game and ultimately there to have fun. And these are all legitimate things that get talked about. And I've witnessed through not being involved in sport necessarily, but following sport closely, particularly AFL in Australia. And like, that's legitimate stuff. And it's that helped to see, they've done their homework with this sort of stuff. I can see why this stuff's working. So that helped me a lot. I thought it was interesting though, and a great choice ultimately, that obviously in the movie, if we're talking about differences, Tom Hanks's character is their manager. And that's a big part of it. They have this male washed up baseball player who comes in to take over, and he's unenthusiastic to begin with, but needs to learn to sort of do it for them and find the joy in it and get as invested in as the women are. How'd you find that change from the movie?
Well, one, I think the casting of Nick Offerman was so smart at subverting my expectations.
I thought he was in for the whole season.
Yeah, because I absolutely love Tom Hanks' character in A League of Their Own. Like, you know, we see that he has all of these struggles himself and genuinely loved the game as much as Gina Davis's character does, and that's how they really connect. But he destroyed himself. He let himself down and he hasn't been able to forgive himself until, you know, we see his journey in the film. And then you cast Nick Offerman in the role as coach of the Rockford Peaches, you know, most famously known for his role in Parks and Rec, who is this kind of curmudgeonly, grumpy person who is actually, you know, an inspiring leader and friend to those around him, and great supporter of women. So that was my expectation. And then to find out that he's not going to improve, he's actually worse than you initially think, and then he's just gone. It was smart. I was like, huh, I didn't see that coming.
Him being a different sort of bad to what Tom Hanks' character is, where I was like, oh, okay, cool. You know, he'll be a part of this entire show, but his journey's going to be very different because he's more of sort of like a swindler type sort of guy than he is just completely uninterested like Tom Hanks' character is. But then that's the bit I agree with you, is like the fact that he just disappears. It's like there is no send-off for this guy. He's just, there's a bit happening over here during one of the games. He takes off and we never see him again. And no one talks, well, I mean, it talks about, but it's like he doesn't reappear. He gets no moment. He's just gone.
Yeah.
I loved that, actually.
Me too. Yeah, that was good.
I thought that was great. Great way to subvert expectations and to make the show, like, even more women-focused, which I think it makes sense for this story to be. I guess the only other character that really surrounded Cass in a big way was the roommate of Shirley, and Shirley finding out that Carson, what'd she call her?
One of those queers? She calls it just queers simply
queers. Queers, maybe it was queers most of the time. Because there was also the idea of the inverts, which is a different thing as well. But how do you feel about that character? I kind of liked the setup to that, like, when this finally happens is going to be a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Solution was a little pat.
Yeah.
I was a touch disappointed with how quickly that resolved, I guess.
Yeah, I at first I was like, oh, this character is quite cartoony, but I don't know. I came to really enjoy the character of, was it Shirley?
Shirley, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. I think it might be the actress. I found her performance quite funny most of the time. I think when they find out that Dove isn't returning, or they've seen some commotion on the sidelines, and she goes, oh my God, he's dead. And they're like, we just saw him. That's not the issue, is that he's died. Like little things like that. I was like, that's funny. Obviously, she's suffering from like OCD and perhaps some other kind of things as well. A nice little comedic moment here and there. I didn't put too much thought into it. Obviously, yes, the panic of, oh, she's going to out us. Obviously, what happened with Joe was terrible, and then you can kind of really see the consequences of what that could mean. To the women involved was quite scary. I can see what you're talking about in terms of the resolution being pat. I'm just trying to think of another way you could do it when someone.
It could have been another season. It could have been there was some sort of like resolution reached, but for it to build up to that and then it didn't really have any major consequences, I guess. It kind of was just, are you going to get on board? And, like, I guess it was kind of more Shirley's story because it was all about her overcoming her fears or her insecurities or her, like, ridiculous phobias and stuff like that she had going on. But, again, it was a very pat resolution. She just kisses Carson. Comedic, you know, like, in a, you know, it's like, what are you doing? This is wild. But then, like, oh, I'm not queer either. And it's like, it's resolved.
I did enjoy Carson's, like, response. One thing I really love about that Abby Jacobs does all the time. Jacobson. Hold on. Let me double check.
I've written it down.
Jacobson. One thing that Abby Jacobson does that she does it all the time that I really enjoy is like a whisper to herself, an aside that she does. Anyway, when Shirley kisses her, she's like, I didn't ask for that. Like, it was just that made me laugh quite a bit. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Moving on from Carson then, Max is our other, really our other lead and the lead of the second storyline of this. And as you pointed out in your review, the one that took what was a token moment in the film and went, actually, we should probably give this, and maybe they couldn't in the 90s, maybe they wanted to, and obviously of the era, it probably was the situation that African-American women weren't allowed to play in the All-American League. But we found a way to make a story for Max. Obviously, the first storyline for her is just simply that she can't play, as great as she is. And they allude to, with a direct homage, to the woman who throws the ball and instead of hitting Gina Davis, you know, hits the other person at the back. She's got a massive arm on her, gives a little nod. Everyone nods, respect, goodbye, no more people of color in our movie.
Yeah.
But Max does a similar thing and throws the ball into the stands and impresses everybody, but still not allowed to play.
Yeah.
How'd you find Max's storyline?
I was really worried when it started. I was like, oh, how are they going to make this work without it feeling like they've just stuck this on top of an already existing show to curb any criticisms that might be raised. And I was like, please don't be shit. Like, I was genuinely worried that I wouldn't enjoy it, that it would feel obviously like tacked on, and that I would be disappointed by that. That's not how I felt. I think the character of Max is quite hard. I mean, she's bullheaded and all of those things, but the softness that we see with her is really lovely, particularly her friendship with Clance. I really loved. I love the woman who plays Clance. She's so good.
100% agree.
And I think that brought a lot of heart, and I was really invested in their friendship. I was really invested in Clance and her husband and him going to war. That was quite heartbreaking, seeing the amount of stress he was under and the amount of fear he had. But every loss and every win Max experienced, I was there with her, and it didn't feel secondary in nature. It felt like this could be its own show as well, and we're going to give it just as much time and love as the other storyline, which was great.
I was genuinely surprised how separate it kind of was. It's not that they didn't cross over in some little ways, particularly Max and Carson form a friendship. They're sort of in the second half of the season, basically. Yeah. But I was expecting, sooner than not, Max is going to end up at Rockford Peach. And it really doesn't happen. Like, by the end of this season, Max is on her own journey doing a completely different thing that may still come around to that one day. I could foresee that being the case. In fact, I think it probably will.
Yeah, I think, because we have this more modern sensibility, while obviously that did not happen in reality, people of color, black people weren't allowed to play in the league. I was like, well, that's not going to happen. But if the show continues to do its own thing, even more so than it already has, then, it could happen.
It can be done, and you can still tell a story about exploitation or something like that. Like, there are many ways to still make Max's journey through the All-American League very different from what Carson and the other girls are going through by nature of however that might come to pass. But anyway,
like pay, accommodation, treatment, all that stuff.
We're getting way ahead of ourselves when we even talk about that, because there's actually so much else going on with Max beyond even the obvious just like segregation of black and white America sort of thing going on here. But I agree with you on the first thing I agree with you on is just the relationship between Max and Clance, which is amazing, and it just proves once again how important character is. It's like when you form, and there's just chemistry between these two leads, and I like being around them, and I care about them. My investment is so much higher so quickly.
Yeah.
It pays off in spades, because you can have scenes with Clance doing her own thing, and I care. Her comic book thing that she's got going on, the stuff going on with her and her husband, the fact that by the end of this season we find out she's pregnant, I think is what they were alluding to there, right? Like, there's all this other stuff going on there too. Even just the strain on the friendship between Max and Clance because of Max's obsession and the things she keeps from and so forth, or the selfishness she has about her own endeavors. I was on board for all of that. Just because that fucking great to be around. That's all it takes.
Yeah, I wanted them to be friends. And if there was an issue, I wanted them to
resolve
it. Or if they were just having fun, I wanted to sit and watch them have fun.
Similarly, though, I was really invested in the relationship between Max and her family, particularly her mother. Like, they set that up beautifully. And why her mum was the way she was about what Max needed to be doing and focusing on building the business and trying to give her all these advantages that she had to work so hard for, and seeing Max, you know, throw those sorts of things away. Totally on board for that.
Yeah, the comment of, well, one, her mum wanting her to read the letters of their family. I was like, okay, yeah, you can understand the fear of not having a way to empower yourself. But then adding on top of that, the acknowledgement that her mum kind of says, you know, I knew that you were going to be different and that you probably weren't going to be attached to a man. So you need like your own foundation, and I wanted to build that for you, was really interesting as well.
all of that stuff just seems so tangible. And like the letters mm-hmm. were a great, like, even though Max doesn't read those letters, right?
Yeah.
It's like just the presence or the existence of these letters, this idea, something, it just felt very tangible and not theoretical. And like, how could you not be that way if you're in her situation? Loved all of that. I thought it was beautifully done. But then we go further with Max in a place I really, really didn't see coming. A, she's also gay and into women. Super gay.
Mm-hmm.
Has been gay for longer than Carson has. Been doing her own thing. In the background.
Did it first.
But then really, really went further with it, the idea of not just sexuality, but her gender identity. And what was happening between her mother and her uncle, who, as the term that was being used in the show, not one I would use, the idea of invert, meaning a trans person. I honestly just could not have imagined or would not in a million years thought that sort of storyline would be in a show set in the 1940s. But that's just sort of shows, I guess, my ignorance to the fact that these things have been around forever.
Yeah. I think when we first get an inkling that there is a sibling of the mum's that's around and Max doesn't really know too much about that, and we see that person drive away on a motorcycle, I thought it was going to be there's, I think it was the 50s or 60s, but I don't actually know. It's like there's this black woman who just like rode around America on a motorcycle, and she's a fucking badass, and she's a bit of an icon. So I thought she was going to be, the character was going to be based on that person, who's, you know, a rebel, and always done their own thing. And then to find out that actually it's Max's uncle, living secretly but openly, was, yeah, I didn't see it coming. And it was really lovely when, you know, Max goes over to his house and meets his wife and hangs out with all his friends. Yeah, it was a really nice side story, and with nice moments of support, but also reckoning and confusion for Max as well.
I thought those elements were really well handled as well. Like Max goes to visit for the first time, confronted by the reality of her uncle. Sort of, they invite her in, you know, warmly. She accepts, I'm just going to the bathroom. I'm done. I'm out.
Yeah.
Leaves.
That was so sad.
You know, comes a few times there are moments like that where it's like, She's welcomed in. She sort of starts to feel comfortable, and all of a sudden she's extremely uncomfortable.
Yeah,
has to leave again. Comes back and forth, trying to figure out how she feels about this, just in a general sense. Trying to figure out what this means for herself. The haircut, but obviously being a very important aspect when she cuts her hair short. Yeah, I thought that stuff. It's obviously very complex. I'm not the right person to be talking about those things in any sort of in depth way. I was just excited and to see it a part of this show.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see it being there, and I think it's, from at least from my perspective, handled really, 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 really well.
I think so. But yeah, I'm not, also not the one to ask.
Was there anything else about Max's storyline in particular that stood out that you wanted to talk about? Anything that happened, any plot developments or moments? There was the clunkiest bit for me, and I didn't hate it because it was cheerworthy, was the bit where she... the setup was good, where she met that other woman playing baseball. She was playing for the African-American League
that was going around. Yeah.
All-Star League, thank you. You know, they have a little romantic interlude of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
Sees her the next day, finds out she's a baseball player. She's a part of this All-Stars squad that's getting around. That causes tension and friction. There's a certain, like, protectiveness that's going on as well. Mm-hmm. There's only room for one of us, unfortunately, because of the way society works. That then leads to that moment where she pretends to the player that's playing with the All-Stars, pretends to injure herself, and then gets Max to come out and play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
cute,
yeah,
bordering on like...
Yeah, I think the only thing that sells it to me is the fact that it's kind of like, what do you call them, like exhibition games or whatever?
It is an exhibition game, that's true. Yeah,
because
it's a show more than
theatrical,
an actual sport.
I was like, oh, well, that would be good theatre for that crowd. I can see how, the coach would be like, oh, okay. yeah, so that's what sold it to me. But, yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. Yeah.
I just kept thinking, don't they have a backup pitcher? Surely that's the whole point. You play her in the outfield. She doesn't need to use her arm out. Oh, well, maybe you play her a little bit closer because she needs to throw. But anyway, like, whatever. It doesn't matter. This is me being picky. I guess the other character I kind of want to talk about, the sort of the third main, if there is one, is Lupe.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, she's got her – she's obviously, as you said, a very serious baseball player and a talented pitcher who is being forced to sort of pitch a certain way by Dove to begin with and then blows her arm up doing that and then has to try to deal with being sidelined, then deal with being coached by Carson. How did you feel about Lupe's storyline?
I mean, it was really frustrating. It was – obviously so sad when she's clearly injured and continues to injure herself throughout the games when Dove is coaching. Mm. And her stubbornness was sometimes annoying to me. I was like, just don't throw that way. Or because you're so severely injured, fair enough, sit out. Obviously within the context, you know that like this is everyone's only opportunity to play professional sport ever. So, yeah, you would hate to leave the game. But me as a person, I was like, just sit out. But I'm also not competitive, so I find it hard to relate to. But I enjoyed the insight of when she's talking to her friend and being like, you know, was it Greta or like someone started the fight first and also she's incredibly capable and yet they all just were okay with Carson being coach. Her frustrations were valid and I came to understand that more and more as the show went on.
And they did touch again. She is of like a Latinx background as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they touched on that a little bit. There's a couple of conversations with I think it's her and Jess and like talking about the difference in like the things Jess doesn't need to think about that Lupe does, which I enjoyed as well, and how that's an important sort of part in what motivates her too. I was surprised. I was thinking in the last episode when she's pitching at the end, they're pitching to Joe, and like she's sort of hurting a little bit. She's like, you know, she's at the end of the day and she's struggling a little bit. I was waiting for her to sort of like step
aside
and
for the team, I'm going to sit out.
Let
yeah, me
pitcher
too.
To come in or pit, the second pitcher come in. Mm-hmm. And that didn't happen.
No.
I was waiting for that moment, and it didn't really need to be there, but I was sort of thought that was what it was building towards. How did you feel about the ending of them losing and then Joe being the one, similar to what happens in the movie where Kit changes to another team and then ends up sort of being the winner for, you know, getting
the champion,
the champion that, you know, being recognized finally, stepping out of the shadow of her big sister. And this instance, it's a very different sort of scenario. Joe wins, but then as she's rounding the first base, fucks her ankle up. And apparently, if she doesn't crawl her way around that fucking diamond, they'll be disqualified, which is the most insane thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, that's a ridiculous rule, and they, if they haven't already, should definitely change that rule.
But then, of course, everyone helps her up and walks her around, an incredible act of sportsmanship, because that's what it's all about, really, guys.
I mean, I was just shocked that, I mean, I'm sure he was in the world of the show, but that the announcer wasn't commenting on what was happening on the field. I'm like, the people at home should really know that this is happening because it's a great moment in sport history. What do I think about that? I thought it was like a really sweet, lovely ending and allows our losers to be winners in their own way, which is satisfying.
But it also lets them have somewhere to go, which I like too.
Yes.
And like, it's true to the movie, obviously.
Well, like,
as well.
Yeah, I figured they wouldn't win and it would be a similar ending because I do think that's a great ending. Though I think
Kit's
Yeah, Kit is a fucking shit. And then she's so cocky at the end when she's signing autographs and like walks over to Kit. Gina after being a fucking bitch the entire film. And she's like, you're coming back next year? And Gina's like, no, this is my one shot. I was here for you and you couldn't even give me a fucking championship. Anyway.
Clearly, that's not the
moral of the film. But
what is the moral of that movie?
Gina Davis is hot. That's the moral.
The moral
beautiful.
Is let your bratty little sibling win occasionally. Yeah. Let them have the controller. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Let them win at Donkey Kong or whatever.
Yeah. Though I do think Gina Davis let go of the ball. That's just my personal opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, right? Right. Yeah. Maybe that's my fan fiction. Anyway, what are we talking about? The ending of this show?
That's the start of your fan fiction. Your fan fiction goes a lot of other places. I did think it was interesting, actually, in your review that I imagine now you don't imagine yourself as her sister anymore in your fantasies. You don't imagine yourself as Kit. I was like,
oh no, I was never.
You were Damask. Okay,
I was Damask. Yeah, fair that's enough. How you always. It's always really clear when you're reading fan fiction, and it's like, oh, this person has just put themselves so they can have sex with all the characters. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's very obvious when that's happening.
Using Mary Sue in an appropriate way, not like they are when they're people are critiquing the new Lord of the Rings show. Anyway,
that is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. Ugh.
Like, did they not watch what Legolas was doing?
Yeah.
With, like, he's running up and down elephants, for goodness sake. It's ridiculous. Anyway,
wild topic.
As it should be, because it's Lord of the Rings. Anyway. what were we talking about? The ending.
Yeah.
it didn't bother me. And like you said, yeah, we've got somewhere to go next year. The Rockford Peaches will be back. It'll be interesting because of their position in society, who will actually be back. Who's going to be traded, how different that's going to look will be interesting.
I did think about that. There's so much room to, like, move characters in and out as you want to from season to season. It's
and
really
I wonder
easy.
If it's, you know, we've had a Rockford Peach season. Maybe it'll be more scattered across the league. We'll spend time with other teams. Obviously, we're going to be hanging out with Max and her team. So, yeah, who knows? We might not just be spending time with the Rockford Peaches.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you have any side notes, Damask?
I've just got a shit ton of favourite bits, but that's about it.
Go for it.
All right, well, favourite bits.
That's a side note. That's perfect.
Smooth transition. All right. Firstly, just Darcy Carden making my heart race. She is commanding. I'll say that. Good Lord. Really, really blew my socks off. All the Carson and Greta kisses, the running away. That was like, it's like they made a femslash video, YouTube video for me, but just elongated into a full-on show. It was incredible.
The fact that it actually is a league it's of their own as well. Is it possible they did find one of your and you just forgot that you wrote this?
Maybe I need to sue someone. No, I'll just sue them for a role in the show where I kiss Darcy Carden a lot. when they first, in the first episode, when they, so we've got Greta, Joe and Carson first coming into the field. And one, that shot just reminded me of the film. And at that point, I was really excited. And then it pans across their face. And Joe and Carson just look so joyful. But then Greta is quite, like, tearful. I don't know. It was just, like, it gave me, like, goosebumps. It was a really lovely moment. All of Clance, like I said, every single moment of her, I fucking loved. Shirley's rituals when she's up to bat, I don't know, it was just very satisfying to watch. And a nice just little moment. And also, this is something I've always wanted ever since I was a little girl, just like a Rockford Peach uniform. I just want one. I love looking at them. They're beautiful.
Fair enough. I've got a couple of side notes. At one point, Nick Offerman's character of Dove made a joke about making love to a man. But in this show, I just had to suspect that was actually true. Like, the show was so gay. I was like, well, obviously he's gay too. Like, that's the only one that's gay.
Everyone's gay, yeah.
Everyone's gay. A line that I enjoyed from the announcer, the fad that's spreading faster than fascism, night baseball. I wanted to go quickly through the reference to the film that I picked up watching as well. Already mentioned Max throwing the ball in the first episode, throwing into the stands, much like the African-American woman in the movie. There's also, as you said, so that shot when they enter the stadium for the first time, mm-hmm. very similar. There's no crying in baseball, a line mm-hmm. that's said many times by Tom Hanks' character as well. I was happy with that inclusion. Max, at one point, the pitcher that ends up giving her a first break throws the ball at her and Max catches it, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. Max catches the ball. I was like, that's what Gina Davis does when she first comes across Rosie O'Donnell and Madonna in the movie. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's direct reference. The song, obviously, the All-American League song. Then probably the one that stood out the most to me as being egregious, if that makes sense, was when in the last episode, Carson catches the ball behind her back, which is something that Gina Davis' character does mm-hmm. in the movie. But I think that's bad because when Gina Davis does it in the movie, it's the context is we're trying to make this more entertaining because no one's coming to see it.
They've got to put on a show. Yeah.
But in this one, it's the championship game. Don't be doing that sort of showmanship shit.
Like I said in my spoiler-free review, even I as a child knew it's championship game. We can't be playing games. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is serious.
Take a fucking standard catch and be happy with it. Don't be doing that sort of showmanship. Mm-hmm. Didn't like that, Carson.
Yeah. Oh, you missed the very first one, which was the running to catch the train.
Oh, the running to catch the train too. And even like the bit of like, I think in the movie, the conductor just sort of lets them on. And this one's like, no.
Yeah, like, do you have a ticket? Oh, yeah.
That's true too. We hadn't mentioned yet the fact that Rosie O'Donnell actually does have a role in this.
She is. I did wonder if they asked Madonna if she wanted to play her wife. Because that would have been amazing.
That would have been cool.
That would have been amazing. Yes, Rosie O'Donnell is in it. That was amazing and I loved that. But I was like, where's Gina Davis? Like, where's everyone? I just wanted, maybe we'll get that, as the show progresses. But yeah, that was really, really sweet to see her. Obviously, tragic circumstances eventually with what happens with that character.
But like, what I think is cool about that, it's like, if you think about... Yeah, I don't know. Rosie O'Donnell playing that character as well in this story, which is doing way beyond just can women play sports.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about things like sexuality and gender identity and that sort of stuff. To give Rosie O'Donnell that, being that bridge between the film and the show in that sense, I think was just the exact right sort of role for it. And like more than just a cameo, it's like it makes it poignant in some way by including her for a role like that. I thought that was
it absolutely
cool.
Does it's amazing how many, well, I can only think of two actually, but like Rosie O'Donnell playing like queer coded characters in the 90s, like I'm like Now and Then, and obviously A League of Their Own, and now obviously things are changing where, because the Now and Then character was meant to be gay. She's clearly a gay character, but obviously made to not be in the film eventually. And obviously, Rosie's more butch character in the film was probably the gayest of the bunch.
Absolutely. What were your highlights and lowlights, starting with your lowlight?
Lowlight. It's hard to say this, but in the first episode, Abby Jacobson's extensions... Because obviously it's before the haircut.
Oh, right.
Speaking of egregious, my God, terrible. You can clearly, they're bad extensions. You can clearly see what's going on.
And bad wig work.
So that was my least favorite bit, my low light.
Mine's similarly like shallow.
Mm-hmm.
The CGI was a little distracting sometimes. Like when they're throwing the balls and stuff like that, like from the outfield back towards, like. It's not the most important thing in the show because the sport is not the focus that much. But I was thinking to myself, like, they're trying to make it seem more impressive than the movie by making things, like, sped up and faster throws and faster pitches. But it kind of just looked fake. Whereas in the movie, although maybe they weren't really that fast or as impressive as they should have been at a professional level, it still just looked like there were people doing it. And so I bought it way more, if that makes sense. That was my low light. What was your highlight?
My highlight. Just...
Which sex scene was it?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of which kiss is my favorite. I've got a montage running in my head. I think
just give me top three. Top three, no particular order. That's fine.
I know. I really enjoyed the. I'm not going to say anything weird, but I just feel like it sounds like I'm going to say something weird.
Sure.
It's when they're in the convent and they're just sitting having like a little picnic in their room. That's really sweet. Oh, I also loved actually when they're lying on the grass together and everyone's kind of like, it's at night and everyone's just kind of playing around and they're just having like a cute little conversation and like, I'm about to say Abby, and Carson like turns and it's just a very cute organic conversation and I was like, they've got amazing chemistry and good God, I want them to kiss just as much as Carson clearly does. And then Joe comes and lays in between. I'm like, ain't that the way? Mm-hmm. Literally any time they're in a scene together, I could just keep listing them. Their first kiss, hot. Their second kiss, also hot, et cetera, et cetera. I go on forever.
you just reminded me, though, this whole idea of, like, practicing at night with torches is absurd. It's the most absurd. That's not possible. That's not going to be helpful in any way. It's just going to be frustrating. Everyone's going to be getting headaches from trying to see these fucking balls in the dark.
But it could be fun, though.
No,
then they just start playing Spotlight, don't they?
Yeah, that's the thing. It was more of end up being more of a bonding thing. Yeah. Okay, fine. The idea of actually practicing baseball at night, that was dumb. My highlight, I think in general, is just like the conviction and the courage of the show to do its own thing. It has some big stuff to talk about. It does a lot more than the original film does, and it just goes all the way with all its ideas. You know, it's not half-assing anything. If it's got something to say, even if it might be controversial, even if people might go, you know, that's not true to the original film, or this isn't what was happening at the time, or whatever. I don't care what it was. It knew what it wanted to do, and it fucking did it. And it was like, as you said, like this show is super gay, and it like it didn't ever want to pretend it wasn't. And every episode just told me how much it just got gayer and gayer. It's like you just gotta give it props for that. No, I think that the conviction and the courage of the show, I think, is the thing that I think is the highlight. Predictions, hopes.
Right, well, yours was clearly deeper than mine was, and I'm the gay one. I was just like, oh no, it was hot. Oh, jeez, what a loser. Anyway, sorry.
I was trying to think of like moments necessarily, and there wasn't necessarily big moments that stood out. It was more like, I think episodes. There was really good episodes, if that makes sense, that were like, that were contained episodes while keeping the story going. I can talk about the other stuff as well, but there was no like, it's not like Stranger Things season 4 where like I couldn't stop talking about the fucking run up
this
that hill
one
bit.
Thing, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't that. It didn't have that. It was more just I was impressed with the show as a whole. Predictions, hopes, and concerns.
My concern is that we won't get a season 2.
I think it's happening.
I would hope so. I don't know.
I think what's happening based on the fact that Paper Girls has already been cancelled. Like that happened super quick.
Yeah,
by the same studio, and I don't know. There seems to be a lot of positive talk around season 2. So that's helpful. But fair concern.
Yeah. So that's always a concern when I really love something. My hope is that while, and this is also, I guess, a bit of a concern, is because now that Max is leaving, those two stories are diverging even more and we don't have her with Clance. So I'm a little worried about that situation and maybe that story not being as compelling as it was in season 1. And predictions... I think we'll have some team mix-ups and because of that, I reckon we might spend a bit of time with at least one other team.
Sure. I think we're going to be introducing new players. As you said, there is that opportunity. People got other stuff going in their lives. This is, you know, not a professional sport, although they are getting paid more. A lot of them are getting paid more than they've ever gotten in their life. So I guess it is a professional sport in some ways, but people got other stuff going on, husbands, families, all that sort of stuff. People will move in, people will move out, which would be good. Great way. Or people will get traded even. It'll be cool to mix it up. Maybe even new teams. I wondered whether, because it's like a 4-team league, right? whether because it is successful, whether it will expand, and so there will be more teams, there'll be more competition. I have a theory that they will be given a new male manager that will be forced on the Peaches, which will create a different sort of tension when they are content with Carson at this stage and they've got, you know, whether it's Dove or someone else, sort of, and then there's going to be that conflict of power and who's leading, which would make sense. I think what will be interesting from the perspective of, like, what's happening with Carson and Greta, way we don't really know what's happened. The Charlie thing at the end is like, okay, whatever. No, I don't care about Charlie that much.
Yeah.
But more attention and more celebrity means what they're doing is going to be harder to hide, whether that's just them or the numerous gay women in the league, because half of them are in that fucking bar.
yeah.
It's going to be hard to hide, and so that's going to create friction and tension, obviously. I've got a feeling, you're talking about Max being on the road, and I think that will be a storyline for 2 or 3 episodes, but my guess is that Max is going to end up back in Rockford, maybe not as a Peach, but back close enough. I wonder whether she might get scouted for a new team. So if there's expansion of the league, maybe what they do is that she gets scouted for another team, or maybe an all-black team.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they've got the black league, essentially, in the men's, maybe they, you know, they need players. There's obviously talent here. So there's, like, the one women's African-American team, and they're sort of segregated in their own way. Or Max does become a Peach somehow and is sort of treated differently than the rest of the women. That's most of it. But I think they're going to find a way to get Max into that league one way or another, is my
guess. I hope so.
I think it'd be good to tie it back in. And again, yeah, just make it a different team in a different city, whatever it is. I don't know. We'll be interested to see how it goes. That's it. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
I'm nowhere personally, but if you want to get in touch, just tweet at the Hunting Seasons Twitter or email us, whatever you want.
Next episode, we'll be back with an off-topic, hot-topic episode. And then again, following that, with a review of Barry Season 3. Looking forward to that. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Absolutely.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.